Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses and training videos, all for one low monthly price. To try it for free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/know-how. That's LYNDA.com/know-how. It's Halloween, so you'll know some tricks and treats, including how to switch out a hard drive for an SSD. Welcome to Know How. This is Twit's fun how-to show. We show you all kinds of fun stuff. I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And if you didn't know, if you're watching this in the future and you're like, hey, what the heck day is it when they're recording? It's obviously Arbor Day, where we celebrate trees.
Yes, trees. I'm all about the trees.
Yeah, it's obviously Halloween, and so we're doing a trick or treat kind of episode, and so we're going to throw in some really stupid tech pranks while Father Robert's got some awesome tech treats.
Yeah.
Let's start with your project. I'm going to bug you throughout and throw on some stupid ideas for the audience as well while you're showing them something useful.
Yeah, so we thought, you know, we wanted to give them the right kind of treat to start off Halloween, and that would be, of course, speed. What is better than speed? What gift would
nothing like methamphetamines get? For the kids.
Exactly. Or your computer, you know, jack it up a couple notches.
For our tech pranks, we asked you guys, the audience, what's your favorite tech prank? I actually asked the question on Twitter, and if you had the hashtag TwitKH in your response, it might have shown up on the air like these guys. Let's see, the first one up was Patrick. He said he once put Hanson's mbop as a coworker's startup sound. She never figured out how to remove it, and she would turn her speakers down. That's Patrick Delahanty, who works here. Turns out he's a really mean-spirited guy. Scott Johnson let me know that for his tech prank, he put my toothbrush in the toilet when I was not in my room in Vegas last year.
Wow.
Thanks, Scott. Tyler wrote in to let us know that he set the desktop wallpaper to a screenshot of the desktop and then hit all the icons. We'll show you how to do that, too.
Yep.
And lastly, we've got Andrew writing in, change the keyboard assignments, send a script that went to hamster dance in the library on his computers. We're going to show you a way to mess with keyboards as well as we're going along with that. But before we get to the silly tricks, we'll go to the treats that Padre has so lovingly put together. What do we got today?
So I decided we should give them the best kind of treat, and that is speed. Who out there doesn't like their laptop or their desktop to be just that much faster? And the way that we thought we'd do it is one of the easiest upgrades you can do. That's changing out your hard disk drive for an SSD. That's a solid state drive.
So we're going to swap out the old spinny disks of the old days, 5,400 RPMs, very popular in the old laptops because they would save power. But they don't have the read-write speeds of a desktop class, or if you have the 7,200 RPM, they eat up a lot of battery life. So in the SSD, we're going to have a lot more speed and power and battery savings, right?
Right. So, I mean, when you think about how much power a rotating platter takes, it's actually a significant amount. So you remove that, you make it all solid state, you're going to be saving yourself a little bit of battery time. The other thing about an SSD is that there are no moving parts. It is, as the name implies, solid state. So it increases the durability of your device. Now, one of the things that a lot of people out there might be worried about is, well, but, you know, Father Robert, my computer's really old. My laptop's really, really old. Is an SSD really going to help it? You know, I've heard that SSDs need the latest and the greatest in order to take advantage of their full speed, which is true, Ayaz, but you still do get a considerable speed bump by putting one of these devices inside.
Yeah, so one of the two major kind of upgrades you can do for an old laptop, RAM or an SSD. But how do you go about choosing an SSD? There's so many options out there.
Very good point. That is step one. You got to choose the right SSD. If you go on the internet, if you go into Amazon right now, you're going to find dozens, if not hundreds, of choices for SSDs. And, well, it can be kind of dizzying because they all look the same. They're all kind of priced the same, but they're not the same units. Here are a few things that you can do to make sure you're choosing the right SSD for either your desktop or your laptop. The first step is you got to look for the price capacity. That's the price point that you're looking for. So if you know you've only got $200 to spend on an SSD, automatically you know you're not looking for a 512 or a 1 terabyte SSD because those run into the $500/$1,000 mark.
Yeah. The cost per gigabyte on SSDs traditionally have been much higher than the old hard disk drives back then.
Right.
So, I mean, that your budget, obviously very important.
Yeah. So what you're looking for is the sweet point. I like the sweet point. You see, the price is more or less linear between about 32 gigabytes, which is the smallest SSD you can buy. In fact, that's a specialty SSD, all the way up to 256. That's, you know, it's going to rise about the same amount per gigabyte that you add. Once you go above 256 gigabytes, it jumps. It's no longer linear, it's exponential. So the price between a 128 and a 256 gigabyte SSD, roughly half. But then you go from a 256 to a 512, and you can jump 3, 4, 5 times.
So at that point, if you're looking at a 1 terabyte SSD, you might as well be looking at a new laptop with a small SSD inside of it. Okay.
Yeah. The capacities aren't at that point yet that we can offer anything above 512, but we're getting there. So right now, I'd say look for something in the range of about 256 gigabytes, because that's going to run you in the $200 range. That's kind of the sweet spot. That's the capacity you want. That's the price you want to pay. Now, that's not the only thing you need to look for. The second part of this first step of choosing an SSD is you look for your format. Believe it or not, not all SSDs, not all hard drives are created the same. They come in different heights. Right now, we've got pretty much the 9 millimeter and the 9.5 millimeter and the 7 millimeter drives. If you don't get the right one, obviously it's not gonna fit. You see a couple of these drives. These are actually the same thickness, but when you go over to the Samsung, this is actually just a tiny bit thicker. It doesn't look like a lot, but when you're talking about a laptop, you know, you can't just force it in there.
Yeah, it's not a great idea when it comes to that because of the height and every inch, every millimeter in a laptop pretty much accounted for. So if you're going to do this, make sure you're looking for the right format because I guess the older machines had the larger drives.
Right.
So you can cram these larger ones in there. But when you have something smaller, you have to make sure there's enough tolerance for these things.
And from experience, I will say there are very few things that are more frustrating than buying a really expensive killer SSD that you benchmark outside of the box and you're like, oh, this is great. And then you realize, oh, no, it doesn't fit. And then you start doing things like removing the casing and
eventually, you're just basically taking your whole laptop, putting it into a briefcase because it fits now.
So that's the first part. That's how you choose, or at least the first part of choosing your SSD. Look at price capacity. Look at the format. Make sure it's going to match up with your budget, match up with your needs, and match up with the size of the device you're going to be putting it into.
All right, let's go to a dumb trick of mine. So I'm an iOS user for a lot of my days. I've got an iPad. And one of the things I like to do if I get my hands on other people's iPads or iOS devices is mess with their keyboard shortcuts. So if you go into Settings and you go into General and then you go into Keyboard, right there on the bottom, let's go real slow. Can you zoom in on that, Brian, the keyboard? It's coming up on the bottom.
Woot. Yeah.
All right, so if I go to Keyboard, what you're going to see is something called Shortcuts. Now, you can see you've got a little copyright thing here, a P with a circle around it, which I don't know what that means. Now, you can add new shortcuts all the time, but what I like to do, if you go all the way to the top of the screen, you can see that I can type in any phrase. So think of a common phrase like, hello. I can actually change the shortcut to hello. So the shortcut is what your victim will type. The phrase you can write here could be anything. So you stole my car, you jerk. So you can write this in and hit save. So anytime I go into anything, let me go find a note. Let me hit notes.
This is evil. This is really, really evil.
So if I make a new note right now, okay, so cut to my. If I type in the word hello, hit return, it just changed it to you stole my car, you jerk. Now, that's a little bit mean. Now, if you want to change up other phrases, hello, bye, on my way, you can change that. Now, one of the things that's really tricky to find, by the way, is how to delete these shortcuts. So if you go back to the shortcut screen right now, if you see this hello, you stole my car right here, if I click it, it just shows me the two things again. Do you see a delete option?
No.
I don't see a delete option, and that's what drives people crazy. So you go backwards, you just have to swipe away. And then hit delete. So
well,
you just got to swipe, and it disappears.
Yeah.
And the reason why I forgot this was on, because if right here it says buy, you owe me $50. I was testing this out, and I forgot it was on. I was like, how do you delete it? Swipe. You can see, you got to swipe there, delete. So that's the way to mess with people's iOS keyboard shortcuts. If you want to, you can change pretty much whatever you want. It's really kind of mean-spirited if you make it mean-spirited. But you don't have to. You can make it kind of whatever you want it to be. So that's one of the little quick tricks for this Halloween that I quite enjoy. Just, by the way, just show them how to delete it. Do yourself a favor, your poor victims.
Be nice.
Yeah, it's always nice to be nice. Shall we go back to the awesomeness that is switching on our hard drives?
Yes, yes. So we talked a little bit about price and capacity. We talked a little bit about the size, about the thickness of the SSD, making sure that you get the right one. Now we go to the part that everyone loves, and that is speed. You get to choose how fast you want it. And like you might expect, the faster the drive, the more of a price premium you're going to pay. What I'd say is anything above about 450 megabytes per second is good. I mean, yes, you can get them up into the 5, 525, 540 megabyte per second range, but 450 will give you decent performance. I think that's pretty much your starting level. Now, here's the thing that a lot of people disregard. It's not just about the read speed. Yes, read speed is great, but you want write speed. What good does it do you if your SSD can read at 600 megabytes per second if it's only reading at 100?
Yeah, so you got to make sure the read-write speeds are... Now, the read-write speeds aren't necessarily one-to-one with hard drives themselves because they don't work the same way. These things have been equilibrated, though, right?
Right. Yeah, they're trying to make everything so that you can directly correlate speed mm-hmm. of a hard drive to speed of an SSD, which it doesn't... I mean, they're different technologies, but they're trying to put it in the same language. It's more or less equal, but and we'll explain a little bit about, you know, how that changes over the life of an SSD and why read and write speed is not alone the only way to choose for it. Now, here's one of the things I really like. These are two drives from Kingston. These are Kingston has become my favorite brand right now. There's two brands that I really enjoy, Samsung and Kingston. Samsung makes an incredibly fast drive, so does Kingston. But what has really impressed me about the Kingston drives is their reliability, specifically their enterprise drives. I put these things into my servers, and I haven't had one fail yet. I probably have about 1,000 of these things in production right now. They sacrifice a little bit of the speed, so the specs don't look as good. I mean, if you looked purely at the spec, at the speed of this drive, you'd say, wait a minute, I'm going to go buy that Crucial. It's $1,000 cheaper. Why not mm-hmm. just get that? But what you need, again, as you mentioned, what you need to look for is what's behind the numbers. It's not all just pure speed. You want speed, you want reliability, and you want them to actually have created the drive so it will maintain that speed over time.
So how long have you been testing out these Kingstons? I mean, you said you have them on your servers. You've been using them for a while. How long have they been surviving this kind of rigorous testing?
Right. I have a data center right now that is running about 500 of these SSD Now 100E. That's the Enterprise Class Edition. They are rated for lower speed, but versus these, most of these drives last for about 1 million hours mean time between failure. These are rated for 10 million. And when you're dealing with a lot of transactions like you do with enterprise servers, that's really, really important. So again, like I said, I've got hundreds of these in production. Not a single one has failed. That's big for me because every time something goes down, it's not just me replacing the drive. It's having to go over to the colo or send someone to the colo, pull it out, redo all the settings, and push it back in. It really has been sort of my choice. It's become my de facto choice. I run Samsungs and Kingstons, but right now I'm probably a bit more on the Kingston side.
So on the spec side, it might look a little slower, but reliability. It's hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
And speaking of reliable, let's actually have another stupid prank, shall we? All right, so this one actually from a website. I found it. It's actually the Infinite iOS message. If you go to this site called, we'll have the link in the show notes at twit.tv/KH. It's called miscellaneousmischief.com. Now, what you do is you save this animated GIF. And this is really to annoy people who use iMessage. And what you can see in the video right now is that there are three dots blinking. Anytime you send a message to somebody or kind of typing on iMessage, you see this particular option go on because somebody's writing you an actual message. Now, this technically isn't exactly the same as the three dots you'll see in iMessage. But what you do is you save that image to your iPad or iOS device. Then you send it as a message. Now, I've done the nice thing of actually sending myself a message, and it looks like I'm infinitely writing to myself. So if you go to my iPad right now, you can see on the top, it's three dots, constantly blinking. So if this was somebody else had written to me, I'd be like, why on earth are they still typing? This goes on forever because it's just an animated GIF. So if you want to drive somebody crazy on an iPhone or iOS or iPad device, whatever it may be, you can send them this animated GIF and they will go bonkers wondering, what are you sending me? What is going on? And eventually they'll call you and go, what's going on? So be prepared for that should you choose to go with this prank. It's only downloading one image, sending it, and then having some fun because, why not troll your friends? But they might think it's serious, so be careful when you use this.
I think that's the new goal whenever we're trying to prank someone on iOS, and that is if you can get them to call you, it basically means they give up, right?
That's yeah, the goal. It's like okay, that. Just mess them up. Like, why does he keep saying these horrible things? And so they write you back, hello, and it says, you stole $50, you jerk. And you're like, then you're starting to fight. This is a really bad thing unless you're a mean-spirited person. Don't be mean about this stuff. These are just simple, harmless pranks. Don't go so bad with these things. So anyway, back to our hard drives.
That's another trick. Let's get back to the treat. Now, okay, let's get past speed because, again, people get caught up in speed. It's easy, right? You want the fastest blah, blah, blah. You want 525 megabytes per second write. You want 540 megabytes per second read. But there is something that I find far more important when you're choosing an SSD, and that is reliability. Now, as I mentioned, these are rated for 1 million and 10 million mean time hours between failure. But again, as you mentioned, that's kind of trying to equivocate this mm-hmm. with a rotating drive. That's not true. That doesn't work anymore. When you had a rotating drive, you could calculate how many times the spindle could go out before parts actually started to break. Not so with an SSD. The way it works with an SSD is it's P and E cycles. That's program and erasure. So instead of a rotating drive inside these things, you've got a bunch of memory cells. Every time you want to write to a memory cell, you have to program it. And every time you want to use that cell for something else, you have to erase it, then program it.
That's why we have these finite lives on SSDs. And
Correct.
This was one of the big original drawbacks of them. You were saying, how many times can I read-write on these things? Mm-hmm. Because in the old days, it wasn't that much compared to a hard disk drive. Now, they're equivalent to, well, for the most part, they'll survive pretty much everyday use.
Right. You may have noticed, especially on those old SSDs, or even like the original Nexus 7, that did not have really good wear leveling, they were writing to the same cells over and over again. And as cells get up in cycles, PE cycles, they start to get slower. They don't erase as quickly. They don't read as quickly. And then finally, they die. Now, what you want in the reliability is not just that super, oh, it's 1 million hours or it's 10 million hours. You want them to tell you how much data you can actually write to the drive. And this gets difficult. There's a lot of manufacturers there who will not list the total bytes written, the TBW. Now, I know that this SSD now from Kingston, this enterprise drive, the total bytes written on this, it's ridiculous. It's something like a 1,000 terabytes. But even the consumer level, the 240 gigabyte one, this is the KC300, this one can do 188 terabytes of writes before it shows its age and dies. Now, that may not sound like a lot, like, oh, it's only 188 terabytes. Let me put it in perspective. If you were to write 100 gigabytes of data to your drive, not reading, but writing, because you can mm-hmm. do unlimited reads, every day, it would still take you over 8 years before you've expended your PE cycles.
Only 8 years?
8 years.
How could I possibly live with a hard drive for that long?
That's
a great way to put that in perspective,
right?
Because it definitely sounds like, you know, you hear that limitation, but it's true of any device for that part.
Right.
Because a spinning drive in 8 years might not work in 8 years.
Right.
But when it comes to those devices, 8 years seems like a lifetime, actually, because you can back it up. Maybe even get a larger drive in the next couple of years, back it up to that.
Yeah. And remember, 100 gigabytes a day is actually really, really uncommon because we're not talking about reads. Once I write the data to a drive, to an SSD, I can read it as many times as I want. It's not going to affect the integrity of the drive. That doesn't use a PE cycle. So if I have all my pictures, all my movies on an SSD, and that's it, I fill it and I only use it to read it, theoretically, it will last forever. It will last until the silicon junctions start to turn back to dust.
You have larger problems in your life when that starts happening,
exactly.
I imagine. You gotta you gotta make sure your life insurance is all paid up and all that horrible stuff.
But it's not just that. Okay, so that's reliability, but there's one more thing. And again, this is where none of the manufacturers do a really good job of spelling it out. You want reliability over time. You want speed over time. And that's when you have to turn to the blog sites. That's when you have to turn to the amateur testers who will tell you, okay, I've had this OCZ drive for 6 months. I've seen a 30% decrease in performance. Or I have this Samsung A40 Pro drive, and I've had it for a year, and I've only seen a 2% drop-off. That's the number that you really like, because that will tell you in 2 years, in 3 years, after I've gone through maybe a quarter of the read-write cycles, will the SSD now be too slow for me to use? And again, that's why I like Kingston, because their kits have been really good about doing what's called over-provisioning. They include extra memory here, so as they start to detect wear and tear, they'll switch over to those unused cells.
You know, one of the weird things I've seen as a trend in the past couple of, I'd say past couple of months actually, is firmware upgrades to SSDs,
yep,
changing the performance like crazy. I know I've seen certain ones from Intel, some from Crucial. When you switch up the firmware, this sounds nuts to even think about this, switch up the firmware for your SSD or change the controller actually that's involved with this, that could actually create a much faster, yep, device. So even if you bought a lousy, you know, let's say a no-name brand, sometimes hacking this, which sounds a bit strange, we should cover that someday,
right.
How to actually hack these SSDs to go faster. They can go faster and operate better if you choose with some crazy firmware. We should take a quick break and thank our friends at lynda.com because they're sponsoring this episode of Know How. Now, lynda.com is an online learning company that can help anyone learn creative software and business skills to help them achieve both their personal and professional goals. With lynda.com subscriptions, members receive unlimited access to a vast library of high-quality, current, and engaging video tutorials across a wide variety of subjects. For software, they've got like Excel, Photoshop, business skills, time management. That was a course I was taking. If you like that kind of thing, you can even find a course on negotiating a raise if you want to do that. Hobbies, you know, if you want to make DSLR video or even programming like CSS or messing with the Raspberry Pi, they've got that. For myself, I am still on the course. I'm learning about Premiere for Final Cut Pro users. For a long time, I've been using Final Cut Pro. I'm actually using Final Cut Pro 6 because I refuse to update to that new thing that Apple calls Final Cut. And if I'm going to bother to learn a new, brand new interface, I might as well go with one that's going to be the standard for years to come. Premiere is one of those things. And the best thing about these courses is these video tutorials are fantastic. They're well-produced, high quality. This isn't like a YouTube video where you can barely hear somebody talking or the lighting is bad or it's dull. But these instructors are at the top of their fields and they're explaining to you how to use these things. It's a fantastic course. I get to use it on my tablet or my mobile device, whatever mobile device I have, my desktop. Everything stays in sync thanks to their playlist from device to device to device. There's over 2,000 courses with new courses being added daily. New courses for this week include a first look at OS X Mavericks Essentials. So if you've upgraded to the free OS, you can mess with that. Lighting for video production. So, you know, if you're going to make a video, if you want to make your own high-quality video, you need lighting. They've got that covered. Management tips and the fundamentals of content marketing, if that's what you're into. Like I mentioned, instructors are at the top of their fields. High-quality video production. The course content is curated. Each lynda.com course is carefully structured so that users can learn from start to finish. Or if you want, if you kind of know the beginnings, you could jump right to the middle of these courses because they're all put together and organized very well. They've even got searchable transcripts that allow you to search inside a video to save time and find exactly what you're looking for. And like I mentioned, you got bookmarks and playlists. So if you want, you could look at these videos in a playlist and keep them organized into a customized learning path. Courses are all over the place in experience. If you're a beginner, they've got courses for you. If you're intermediate, they got that. If you're an expert, they've even got expert courses for you guys. And again, all kinds of skill areas like technical skills, creative techniques, business strategies, and more. And if you're finding inspiration, like what on earth am I going to do? I go to lynda.com. I could learn anything. There's over 2,000 courses. Well, lynda.com also has a series called Creative Inspirations, which are documentaries that follow companies and creative individuals who are leaders, entrepreneurs, inventors, experts, and pioneers in their field. Our good old friend, Burt Monroy, is on there as a creative inspiration documentary. And like I mentioned, you could always watch it from your computer, tablet, mobile device, whatever you want. If you've got 15 minutes or 15 hours, you can learn at your own pace on your own schedule. It's only $25 a month to access Lynda's entire course library. Or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's project using the exact same assets they're using to teach you. And you can try lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/knowhow to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. That's lynda.com linda.com/knowhow. And we thank linda.com for their support of Know How because they help us put this show on for you guys. Shall we go back?
I think so. We got to continue our treat. So we just shown them how they're going to choose their SSD. I've actually chosen this Kingston because, again, this is my personal favorite.
Wait, you went with a Kingston?
Yeah, I went with a Kingston. I've got two that I are my top rank. The first one is the Samsung 840 Pro. Mm-hmm. Great drive. It probably is the fastest drive on the market. But I went with the KC300 because it comes with a complete kit. I find it to be a bit more reliable. And, you know, it comes down to personal preference. In the systems that I use, I find that 840s are great, but I have had an error with an 840. I've never had an error with a Kingston. It only takes once to be bit, right?
Yeah. I've switched manufacturers based on such things when they die on me. I've noticed here you seem to have some kind of relic from the 1940s.
Exactly.
This laptop here. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can't see the depth of this. So this is one of the hard drives he had, that Padre had in the case. I don't know if you can see the... So here, you know what? Here's an iPad. You can see that... I would need six iPads. This is a monstrous. How old is this thing?
This thing is a six-year-old gaming PC. This is a desktop replacement. It only weighs 10 pounds.
You got to show the side here. This is... Okay, this... And this is an iPad fourth generation, okay? So you can see there's some serious processing power in here, so we're going to make this faster with that SSD.
Right. And the reason why I chose these is, well, first of all, I had them hanging around. I bought these like 6 years ago for a training course I was teaching. But... we want to show people that they can take an old piece of technology, mm-hmm. so their old laptop, and breathe new life into it with just one component. A lot of people out there are skeptical because they think, wait a minute, you know, there's the processor, there's the memory, there's all the subsystems. Can an SSD really make that much of a difference? We're going to show you what kind of a difference it can make. So again, I chose this Kingston KC300 because it has all the bits and pieces that you might need if you're just learning how to do this, including, this is important, the cloning software. So this is the bit of software code that's going to allow you to clone the drive that you currently have in the laptop or the desktop so you don't have to do a fresh installation of everything.
So you don't have to restart everything. You don't have to go through the course of finding your old apps, all your old disks. I just went through my garage and threw out a whole bunch of my install disks because I'm like, I'm not going to use these anymore. But a cloning piece of software obviously helps you with that, and it's included with the Kingston kit.
Right, yeah. So this is true of most kits. You know, they include everything from like a mounting bracket to the individual cables that you might need. This is kind of cool. This is the enclosure which will allow me to actually put the SSD or the hard drive into so that I have an extra place for it to fit while I'm cloning.
Okay, so we can actually use it as an external drive. Otherwise, you're going to have a bare drive. You're like, how do I connect this?
Yeah, exactly.
It comes with that. That's great.
That's all in there along with, of course, you know, the SSD. So this is that 240 gigabyte SSD 300. Now, really easily, you got to get access. So this is not always the easiest thing. You're going to have to look at your laptop or desktop manual to find out how you open it up. But once you do get open, this is a unique laptop because it has two drive bays. Most laptops don't do that anymore. This one obviously does. It's just a simple matter of taking out the hard drive. If you can get it to actually come out. This has been in here for a few years, so it's...
The longer it's been in there, the harder this is going to be to get out, but don't worry.
It's going to come... Wait. Oh, there we go. Okay, so now it's out. This is my old rotating hard drive. This is actually a 500 gigabyte drive, so it's not bad, but it's definitely not an SSD. Now it's just a simple matter of putting the new SSD back into the caddy that I just removed the hard disk drive from. Like so, and then just reinserting it. Now, this is a really, really easy setup because this laptop has been designed for stuff like this, but mm-hmm. it's not always going to be like that. Now, Brian's got a video here that shows the install that I did of one of these back in my lab in San Francisco. It really is this simple. You just go ahead and open up the drive bay so you can get at the storage devices. In this particular case, I had two drives in there already. You remove it. Upgrade the SSD, the hard disk drive to an SSD, plug it back in. The laptop or desktop should automatically recognize it because to the BIOS, it just looks like another storage device. It looks like a hard disk drive, and you'll be good to go. Now, IS, here's the choice. Here's the big thing. Are you going to clone it? Are you going to do a fresh install?
Well, I mean, if you're going to clone it, only if, one, you got rid of all those disks like I did. Right. If you're like, okay, where are my programs? I don't know if they... Look, I always mention this one because it's one a ludicrous program I used to use called Instant 3D. It was one of the first 3D modeling pieces of software I ever got. It was like $20 in a box. I bought it at Staples. Now, there's a good chance that disc is somewhere, I don't know, in a landfill at this point, or recycled responsibly, or whatever you do with the CD. But the thing is, if you don't have access to your original programs, your original pieces of software, that's when you clone. But if you want speed, fresh install is always the way to go, right?
Yeah. That, I mean, I'm the same way. I like cloning. I understand why people clone, because it can save time. Mm-hmm. The nice thing about cloning on this laptop or on a desktop is you could actually have both of your drives hooked up to the SATA interface. Because if you go over a USB interface, it's going to be so much slower. We're talking about 480 megabytes over this versus 3 to 6 gigabytes per second over this.
Yeah, so but a six-year-old laptop, we're probably talking about a Windows XP installation that has tons of registry right. changes. You probably installed apps, taken on apps. There's all kinds of crud that's left over. Yeah. Over the course of several years, especially of usage, you know, this registries get really messed up. Fresh installations actually would probably help the old hard disk drive mm-hmm. if you want to use that. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to start over anyway, SSD.
Yeah, and so that's what I recommend. I say if you're going to do this project, and if you're doing this because you want performance, why not get the best performance out of it possible? Do a fresh install. Go ahead and wipe everything clean. Now, I know you may not have all your original disk. Now, you're in luck. If your PC is, I'd say, 3 years or younger, and it's a Windows PC, most likely the restore disks are on the hard drive. They typically have a mm-hmm. restore utility where you can create the backup. And it'll burn a couple of DVDs, and you're good to go. Now, all the other software that you have to add on, yes, sometimes you may not have it, but most of the times you can go ahead and just download it off the internet again. You can get the latest version. You can get yourself that nice, super clean, super sweet, super fast installation that you have always been looking for.
So if you want to mess with that super clean, super awesome installation, I got an idea. I got another stupid trick for you. This is one that's obviously been mentioned by somebody on Twitter. This is that prank where you basically... You will copy the desktop. So if we go to my Windows PC here. This is really simple to do. It's a fun prank. You hit the print screen button on your keyboard. You launch Paint. Let me launch Paint. And what you do is you just paste it in. So right now, so when you hit print screen, it actually takes a screenshot, if you're not aware. This is like an old Windows trick from I don't know when. I've been using it forever. It's kind of I just assume that everybody knows this. So then you paste it into Paint. You hit Save. I'll name it. It's the new wallpaper of annoyance you could see up here. And what I can do is then I can go into personalization, and I can change my desktop background to actually just change it automatically. New background of annoyance. Now you can see that these double icons, right? So I'm going to make sure that they never see that. So I'll right-click the screen, and I'll go to view, and I'll say, I'll uncheck show desktop icons. Now,
oh boy,
these don't work. It's actually cycling them through another wallpaper. So what's going to happen with Padre's brand new clean install? He's got his icons on there. Ain't nothing going to work
That's just longer.
Mean. Obviously, this is a little bit different in Windows 8 because you do have the Metro tiles and they have access to that. But I'll show you a way to screw with that even, not necessarily the tiles, but to drive them crazy because the keyboard is not going to work the way they're used to. We'll get to that at the very end. But yeah, that's a way to drive people bonkers, including yourself, because apparently I pranked myself months ago and my wallpaper was like that because I was testing this and I forgot it. And I was like, what's wrong? I'm like, Windows 8.1 screwed up. And I'm like, no, it was you. You did this to you.
That would be the worst feeling ever, to get back to an old laptop that you've had sitting around. And you're like, what's going on? Why isn't anything working? Come on.
I was like, what, that new start button? Why is it always on the screen? Because you changed it.
Don't prank yourself.
You did it.
Don't prank yourself. You better check yourself before you prank yourself.
We should check the speed. So assuming that nobody did this to your laptop, right. How can we get...
Well,
let's get
to speed, I do want to do one more thing. Back on to the fresh installer cloning. Again, both Ayaz and I are agreed that you should do a fresh installation. But if you do want to clone, Ryan's going to play a video right now that shows you how easy it was to do. I essentially ran the software that came with the Kingston kit. I went ahead and put the old hard drive into this enclosure and plugged it in. And then I ran the software, which is this wonderfully easy-to-use piece of software called Acronis True Image, which then copied exactly, so sector for sector, the contents of the hard disk drive over to the SSD. Now, the cool thing about software like this is it automatically resized. So I didn't have to worry about partitioning. I didn't have to worry about reinitializing drives. It made sure everything fit. As long as the total amount of data on the drive is less than the size of the SSD, it will go ahead and copy it over and it will make it work the first time. Once this software was done, I went ahead and just pulled the USB enclosure. I restarted and I was good to go. So again, don't do it that way. Really, please don't do it that way. Do a fresh installation. But if you need to clone, you can go ahead. Actually, here's another trick for you. If you do a fresh installation on your SSD, you can use that same software, that Acronis True Image, to make a copy of your fresh installation. So if you ever mess up your solid state drive, mm-hmm. and you don't like the installation, you can reverse the process and put yourself back to start.
Great idea. Hang on to that just when you have it nice and neat and nice and clean.
But now, IS, we got some speed.
Well, I mean, you're going to go ahead and put these new drives in. If we don't have any speed performance boosts, what do we do this for?
Exactly. Now, remember, again, this is the big question. Will an SSD, especially an SSD that has capabilities that are unusable by an old laptop like this, will it speed it up significantly? Brian, go ahead and run a quick video I did back in the lab. So this is running PC Mark Vantage. This is on the old laptop. You see it's stuttering. Now, remember, exact same device. The first laptop pulled 4222. That's its 3D PC Mark score, right? Not bad. It's actually pretty good for a six-year-old gaming laptop. But then we replaced one part, just the SSD, ran the exact same tests, and we saw the motion was much more fluid, even though it's the same video card, it's the same memory. And my score went from 4222 to 6,729. We're talking about an over 33% increase just from replacing the storage device. Now, and again, I get power savings, I get a more durable laptop, and I get a huge boost in performance. Now, benchmarks are great, but a lot of people go, oh, what's the real world going to do? Okay. Well, real world, here's a little boot test. Everyone loves the boot test. How quickly does it get to a usable window? Brian, go ahead and run that video side by side. Two identical laptops. One has the SSD that I just installed. One has the old hard disk drive.
Let me see if I can guess what's happening. Let me see which one is potentially SSD. I'm going to assume that the slow one's the SSD. No, because you didn't install it, apparently. That's on the left side. That thing went screaming fast. I assume the left side is the SSD, right?
Yeah, so within a minute and 4 seconds, I was at a usable Windows desktop. So not the desktop with the rotating, oh, I'm here, but I'm not really here, but ready to go, ready to compute, ready to run. Exact same configuration, right? These are the same laptops. They were bought at the same time, and the only difference is the SSD, and they're a clone of one another. So it's the exact same setting in Windows, and I only get to a usable desktop right about, say, I start the spinning icon, wait for the spinning icon to go away, right about, boom. So 1 minute and 45 seconds versus 1 minute and 4 seconds. And again, that's replacing one component, just one component, and I get that kind of a speed boost.
That reminds me of the prank that Patrick pulled off with switching the startup sound. I used to have an old machine that I changed the startup sound from the little window sound to the entire Beavis and Butthead theme because that's how long it took to boot up properly. So once the music started, it took about 3 minutes before it was usable. SSDs were not an actual option back in 2001.
Right.
It'd probably be very expensive. Yeah. But yeah, so that's really a big change.
One more note. That hard disk drive was actually running a super clean image of Windows. So it was all the stuff you don't need stripped away. If you were running a standard image of Windows, let's say one that had been running for the full 6 years that this laptop has existed, it would probably be a boot time somewhere in the 3 minute realm.
Well, that's the point where you throw it out the window. I know that.
Exactly. But it's another reason why please do a fresh install, because that alone is going to give you a little boost in speed.
Well, let's screw with the keyboards now.
Yeah.
Because this is my last little trick right now. There's another little trick if you want to do this. This is really simple. I don't even have to show it to you. If you have a friend who has an optical mouse, put a piece of paper under there, like a Post-it. They'll go nuts trying to figure out why it's not working. They might think it's a driver, but it's just really the optical is not working. So let's talk about a keyboard right now. This is about switching the input device on a Windows device. If you're on Windows 8, go to Control Panel, go into Language, and then we're going to go into here. We have English. I'm going to hit... let's see, add a language, is that what I'm supposed to do? Language options, okay, I'm going to go options right here. Now what I'm going to do is this input method. I'm going to add an input method, and I'm going to find Dvorak keyboard. Dvorak, let's see. Now, I can say left or right hand. It doesn't matter for this purpose because you will be screwing with people, but I'm going to pick right hand. And if you want to see what that's going to do to the keyboard layout, it actually shows you a preview where your new letters will be on the keyboard. So I'm going to hit close. That looks good and screwy. Hit add. And then I'm going to remove the normal one, the U.S. international one. Kaboom, that's going away. Hang on, before I remove that, let me just test it here before. This is normal. So this is the normal typing. If you can see, that's normal. I'm going to remove the international U.S. one. And now I've got Dvorak with right hand. I'm going to hit save. And then I'll go over here. I'll type in the same phrase. This is normal. Now, this can drive you crazy because if you go to the start screen and I start typing for a search, like I want to type in control panel, do you see on the right side? I'm typing the word control. Do you see how that's not working? That's going to drive you crazy. So only do this to somebody who you are willing to help out at the end because they will be going bonkers about how this works. It's simple. It's easy. It's built into Windows 8. No extra software. You didn't do anything too horrible. But you've effectively rendered their system somewhat unusable, a little bit unusable.
I could see people going crazy and just doing a reinstallation.
Like, why is it talking
garbage? Forget it. Just
reinstall.
Boom.
Yeah, so that's the final little trick of my little series of stupidity right there. I better switch that back for myself.
Yeah, you're going to
Otherwise,
forget.
I'm going to be like, what happened? I'll go back over here. And I'll go keep doing that.
And as we knew, we've always known, Dvorak drives you crazy. Yeah, okay. I'll just go back. Now, here's a question. We just pulled this SSD out of this laptop, and now we have to ask ourselves what we're going to do with it. Now, we originally thought of a couple ideas of pulling out the rare earth magnets to play with them, but we decided to save that for a future episode. So instead, Brian's going to throw you to a quick tip. If you just upgraded the hard disk drive in your laptop to an SSD, first, congratulations. You've now joined the world of the speedster. Now, the second question is, what do you do with that old hard disk drive? It's probably not that old, and it's probably larger than the SSD, which means it's got too much capacity and it's got too much value to just throw away. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire, the Digital Jesuit, with a quick tip on how to reuse the old hard disk drive. Now, if you bought a kit, something like this, the SSD Now KC300 from Kingston, it came with a device that allowed you to clone the drive to your SSD. And if that's the case, it's really, really simple. After you remove the SSD and installed it in the laptop, you simply take the old drive, put it into the enclosure, and you're good to go. Now, that's easy, and if it's available to you, you might as well use it. But that won't suit everyone's needs. These aren't always of the highest quality, and they may not offer you the speed that you want. And that's why we've got these. These are a few enclosures that I've purchased over the years to enclose old hard disk drives. Now, these can be anywhere from $5 on the internet all the way up to $200 and above, depending on what kind of interfaces you're looking for. This one uses standard USB 2.0. This one uses USB 2.0 and eSATA. You can also get them with FireWire, with Thunderbolt, with pretty much any interface options that you're willing to pay for. But all of them work the same way. And that is, once you've opened up the enclosure, you simply install the drive that you took out of your laptop, close it back up, and now you're good to go. Now, one note of warning, and that is, depending on how the drive was formatted and depending on exactly what was done to it, you may need to reinitialize it. You have to find out how to do that process for your operating system of choice. It's different for Mac, it's different for Linux. And for example, in Windows, I would just go into the control panel, I would go into the administrative tools, I would go into my storage manager, and then I just tell Windows that, yes, this is a drive I want to access, please make it available. Now, these are a few really easy options for you to take, not that expensive, but if you're looking for something a bit more upscale, I may have something for you. The device that I've been using recently is this. This is a Velocity Micro VM Ultra. Now, it's definitely a lot bigger than any of these enclosures, but what you get is a lot of speed and a lot of function. The first thing is that it's USB 3.0. Compared to USB 2.0, which is 480 megabits, that's million bits per second, this is 5 gigabits. Yeah, do the math. Now, it's not just faster, it also contains a lot more than just an external enclosure. Here is a slot for you to insert an optical drive. Now, on my kit, I use a Ultrabook, which means it doesn't have an optical drive, so I enjoy the option of carrying one with me if I ever need to read system DVDs or CDs, or
if on those late nights I want to rent something from the local Redbox. It's not just the optical drive. On the side here, I have a USB hub. That's right, I get two USB 3.0 out and one USB 2.0 so I can connect my keyboard, my mouse, my peripherals to this device off of that one cable connecting back to my laptop. It also has a media card reader for those with laptops that, well, don't have that capacity. Of course, it's all about enclosures. And that's at the bottom. Behind this nice little easy-to-use slot is a tray. And it slides in really easily with any SATA-compatible drive. Now, the cool thing about this is because it's so easy to access, this has become, well, my go-to device because it means I can pop drives out of laptops that I'm servicing and within a couple of seconds have them up and running on my laptop. It's just a bit more convenience. Now, of course, you're going to pay for this. These enclosures, again, can go anywhere from really, really cheap to, you know, $100, $150, $200. This starts at $100 and goes up depending on the kind of features that you add to them. But it is nice to know that you can take that old drive and reuse it. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire, and this has been your Quick Tip.
So if you're wondering about any of the stuff we talked about today, you're like, hey, what hard drives was Father Robert talking about? What about these stupid tricks? How can I go find them and how to actually get that image that drives people crazy? Don't worry, we'll have show notes at twit.tv/KH. And actually, if you go to twit.tv/KH, you'll see the beautiful show notes, but you'll also see lots and lots of older projects. We have this huge library of projects so you can learn and do all kinds of crazy fun tech projects if you got some spare time. Last week we showed you how to do a Raspberry Pi MAME and how to choose a podcasting mic, understanding cardioid patterns and all kinds of things like that, because Father Robert nailed that information. Where else can people find us, Father Robert?
Well, you know, they're also going to be able to find us on the regular old emails. You know, they're going to find a way to write us to tell us whether or not they understood what we were doing, ask us for future episodes, or you know what, this week, why don't you tell me the kind of SSDs that you like? Because I want to know what people are using. I want to know what your experiences were like. You can reach us at, what is that? knowhow@twit.tv.
Yeah, yes, it's knowhow@twit.tv. That's knowhow@twit.tv. What is it?
No, knowhow@twit.tv.
Yes, now you know how now to send an email to knowhow@twit.tv. Don't worry about it. I mangled it for months. That's my own. Don't even worry about that. It happens. There's also Google Plus. If you want to have a nice public conversation, go to our Google Plus community. I keep calling it a forum because it feels like a forum. There's over 4,900 of you in there now asking us tons of questions. The number one question this week was, hey, Brian, what was that nifty wooden case you had on your Raspberry Pi MAME? And he does give you a link. Brian Burnett himself is in the community, and he actually gave an answer with a link. What a nice guy with an Adafruit link. gplus.to/twitkh is the easy way to find our community.
Yeah, you know, but we're not only on G Plus in the socials. We are also heavily invested in Twitter. You can find us on Twitter, you know, either I as Actow or Padre SJ. But if you want to write to tell us publicly what we should be doing or what you liked or what you didn't like about the show, go ahead and send a message with the hashtag. That's hashtag TwitKH.
Yeah, it's actually at Iaz,
at
Padre SJ, at Snubs, yeah. At Cranky underscore Hippo. Is that what it is? Cranky underscore Hippo, if you want to follow Brian Burnett, who you can't see is also dressed up today as a captain. Do we have a shot of that,
yeah,
sir?
Yeah, we really should.
No?
Command,
we will have a picture of all the twits dressed up on the G Plus site and on Twitter. Why the heck not? Because that's crazy and wild. Do we have? We do.
Oh.
Look at that. We have lots of Brian today all dressed up. He's our captain. Thank you for flying with Air Burnett. Actually, by the way, on this side, I might throw a little bit more tricks on the show notes. Then that does it for us. Now that you know how to do some tricks and an awesome treat, why don't you go out and do it? Because that's lots of fun. Be safe.